Good morning, Arizona. Thank you for joining us. Before I introduce our guest today, we have Steve with a fire update on the Bighorn Fire. Steve, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Sherry.
So what's going on?
Okay, so first the numbers. Everybody's always interested in that. We have 119,236 acres, 85% containment, and we are now down to 263 men and women still on this fire. We haven't seen any fire growth or very minimal fire growth probably now for we're into the 9 or 10 days since we've seen any significant growth. So we're kind of more concerned now about the excessive heat warning since there's not a lot of fire activity. Trying to keep our troops, you know, well hydrated, keep them out of the heat of the day, try to find some shade. Hopefully we get some cloud cover for them. Residents have been allowed now for the past 3 days back into the Summer Haven area. However, that is just for residents only. They have to have some form of documentation with them supporting that. It is still closed to the public at large.
Okay, so also, people trying to get up there, they should find other things to do.
Find other places to recreate. We understand them wanting to get up there. We were up there yesterday ourselves. It's about 30 degrees cooler, which I'm not telling you guys anything you don't already know. But yeah, it's we still have a lot of fire vehicles, heavy equipment working in that area. And the forest remains closed anyway, so they couldn't recreate up there. They still have the forest restrictions in place.
Okay. What else do we need to know?
Just to please honor that, Pima County Sheriff's Department has the roadblock set up there on the Santa Catalina Highway. And some people yesterday were trying to, you know, like get through with different stories, but they are turning them away. So a lot of those people are volunteers, so we don't want to make their job tougher. So just please honor that. And again, the forest is closed. So until the Coronado National Forest, you know, lifts that restriction. So, and then the heat again, we're just trying to keep our people hydrated. We also have something called fuel geysers. When a chainsaw gets hot, when they're running it, when it's this type of heat, we can have the gas erupt out of pressurized gas erupting out of the chainsaws, which is a real hazard to firefighters. So that's a safety message we got out to the troops today as well to mitigate that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound healthy at all.
Yeah. We've had in the past, I'm not on this fire, fortunately, but there have been bad, pretty severe burn injuries from this phenomenon. And wow. You see it especially on days like this where it's really hot. And I just wanted to put out too, I'd be really remiss if I didn't thank this community. I've been doing this a long time all over the Western United States. And this town, Tucson in particular, the people have been super supportive. We're inundated with thank you cards, with people wanting to, you know, donate things, which we do not need. But we really appreciate the love that we felt from this community. It's pretty overwhelming. And so it's been a real privilege to serve this community. And I'm so happy that our men and women were able to save Summer Haven, because that place has had its challenges in the past, and the crews did an amazing job. If you look at a fire map, I mean, we call it the donut hole, you know, but to them, that's their home. And
exactly.
We're really happy that, you know, we kept the fire out of that area.
No, you guys have been amazing. We all really, really appreciate you. And I know you come in from all over the place. And where are you from? You're not from here.
So I'm out of Las Vegas. My partner's okay. Next to me here. You've spoke to him earlier, I think, on the show, Steve Kleist. He's out of Ventura, yeah. California. It's not unusual. I was on a fire in Colorado last year where we had firefighters from 39 different states.
Wow.
So we come from all over. And, it's kind of what we do. We're fire gypsies in the summer, and everybody helps each other out. And then we have the added challenges this year of the COVID restrictions. So it's fire season 2020 will be one for the books for sure.
Absolutely. Well, tell everybody that's up there, thank you from us. We really, really appreciate everything you're doing, and be safe.
I will pass that on. It's a pleasure speaking to you.
You too. You have a good day. Stay cool.
You as well. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, that was our fire update. We couldn't do it without all these men and women who come in from everywhere it's just amazing, and they're so talented and trained, constantly training in their craft. We have in the studio, we have Daniel Hernandez with Border Patrol, and on the phone we have his partner Joe, and we're going to talk about rescue. Our first topic is rescue right away.
That's correct, Sherry. Thank you for having us again. We're always delighted to be here, me in person and my partner on the phone. I'm going to segue over to him, but just wanted to say that, you know, one of the things people often forget is that we are law enforcement. That's our primary mission. We're out there doing protecting the country, but there's also a component where any day, any moment could turn into a life-saving mission as well. And that's one of the things that we're doing with great frequency these type of times of the year is rescuing a lot of folks out in the desert. We just heard about the heat warning, and that's one of the things that we're doing. I'm going to segue here to my partner. He can give you some of the stats, kind of where we're at and as far as the year and how many rescues we conducted. Joe, can you hear me?
Yep, got you guys loud and clear. Great to be on the show here this morning. Yeah, so like you know, Dan was saying, rescues are really an integral part of what we do as Border Patrol agents when it comes to this time of year. It's really no surprise to anybody in southern Arizona that we hit temperatures that exceed, you know, 110, sometimes upwards 120 degrees this time of year. So far in fiscal year 20, we've actually exceeded over 1,000 rescues.
Oh, wow.
And right off the rip, that that kind of sounds like a lot, and it is. That's actually more than we've done, more than we did all of fiscal year 19. Fiscal year 19, so last year we ended with 924 rescues. So we've already surpassed that, and we're not even done with the summer yet. So we still got a couple more hot months to go, and we're already out here in full swing doing our rescue thing.
What makes you... why the increase? What makes you think that all of a sudden there's so many more, and it's not even, the year's not even half over?
You know, we get that question a lot, and really it's not really up to the people who are smuggled where their coyotes, where their guides are going to take them. So as smuggling patterns change, sometimes these people are brought into increasingly more remote and remote areas where it's extremely difficult to traverse the terrain. We deal with some very rugged mountains, and that's extremely difficult for really anybody to get through, let alone trying to do it in 100-degree weather. So we kind of have seen an increase in traffic in some of those more more rugged-type areas and those mountainous areas, and I think that has something to do with it. But also there's been an increase in our capabilities to receive 911 calls. So as technology has advanced and as people have gotten better and better cell phones, it actually allows them to call for help in areas that previously, you know, that wasn't possible.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Now, it's, you know, 1,000 degrees out there. Do you guys have winter uniforms and summer uniforms, or are you always wearing the same hot uniform?
Well, we do have a long sleeve and a short sleeve version of essentially the same shirt, but you know,
not what I had in mind.
it's a decently thick material. I mean, and it kind of has to be. You know, it's got to keep our agents safe while they're doing their job out there. And you know, last thing I think a guy wants is for you know, their uniform to get ripped out there. Unfortunately, our uniforms are, you know, not the most breathable material, but, you know, our agents do a great job at making do with what they got. And, we, you know, it's paramount for us to make sure that our agents are sufficiently hydrated to go out there and do the job.
So I went through your, what is it called?
The Citizens Academy.
Citizens Academy. And some of those areas are really, really remote, where we were watching what you guys were doing. How do you stay hydrated when there's no water fountain in, you know, 6 mile radius or more?
Definitely very heavy on the electrolyte drinks. We like to bring out their little packets of and a powdered electrolyte where we can just add to water at any given moment. We actually utilize that a lot when we encounter people who are severely dehydrated. We'll give them that in addition to water. But yeah, it's all about taking care of yourself, and our agents out here, they're aware of the dangers, and we do everything we can to just stay hydrated.
So they're prepared. I didn't know you had powder electrolytes. That's pretty cool. Okay, let's talk about snakes.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the environmental dangers out there in the desert are animals. You know, these beautiful creatures, but some can be deadly, including snakes, which I became intimately familiar with June 18th.
Are you going to show us your scar?
I don't have any scars.
No scars.
I have a discolored leg. So for all the listeners, I was actually bit by a rattlesnake myself, and my partner were working out last year on June 18th after work, and decided to take the dogs for a walk as soon as I got home. And on the walk about a block from my house, I was bit by a rattlesnake.
And you don't live out in the suburbs. You live now.
I don't. I live on the west side, and so my area is, you know, standard neighborhood. You know, there's not too many areas where one would think a snake would live, but it was in the middle of the street, or in the middle of the sidewalk, in the middle of the block. So I got bit, and a lot of people, including in the Border Patrol, when they're out patrolling, many times encounter snakes. And unfortunately, we've had several bites. Mine have been off duty, but some of our partners have been bit on duty. And it's pretty good prognosis nowadays. I mean, the fatality rate is extremely rare. It's more than anything, people should know that they're not going to die when they get bit by a snake. But there is a potential for other complications. And that's one of the things to remember is anybody listening, if you're ever bit, you got to keep your heart rate down and try to be as calm as possible.
Stay calm and call 911.
Stay calm, call 911. You don't have to catch the snake.
Doesn't it help to know what kind of snake bit you?
It's always good to look at it, but I'm sure you're going to look at it. I saw mine was a rattler. I remember distinctly I saw the rattle as it was crawling away. And, you know, for the most part, the medicine nowadays is pretty good, and they can treat you well.
I thought you had to know what kind of snake it was to get the kind of medicine you need.
As long as they know what type of family it is, like a rattlesnake bite is a rattlesnake bite. They give you an anti-venom that has several different strains or several different, I don't want to butcher the science behind it, but they give you something that kind of encompasses several different snake types.
Okay.
And so as long as you're able to see it. But in Arizona, if you see a snake that bites you and it's got fangs on it, there's a high probability it's a rattlesnake.
So you don't have a new belt or, you know, a headband or anything?
No, I didn't. I wish I would have. But, you know, and one thing to note is snakes are very kind in the sense that they give you a warning. You should always heed that warning. And one of the things that has happened recently is as people approach snakes, when they rattle, you're supposed to leave them alone. And that's what you should do. Just go around it. Don't get near it. A lot of people have been killing them. And so the ones that like to give off warnings, the nervous snakes, they're the good snake. Those are the ones that are not reproducing. The quiet, more aggressive ones are reproducing. So there's been a higher frequency of them not rattling before their strikings, which was the case in my bite. I did not hear the rattlesnake rattle. It just bit me.
How many rattles did it have?
It was pretty big. It was a youth. It wasn't a full grown snake, but it was pretty long, and it was about 2 feet. But the rattle was pretty long on it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So we're not going to see a scar because he doesn't have one.
I lost my shin muscle. One of the things is I did get permanent injury from it.
Well, that's what I heard. That it does nerve damage. It depends on, you know, the snake, where you bit, how you respond to it, but
it is. But that's an environmental danger out there, and that's one of the things with Border Patrol we're trying to message. You know, my partner just talked about the dangers of the elements, of the heat, but another danger of the desert is the animals. When somebody crosses the desert illegally, they're exposing themselves to the dangers of the heat, the terrain, as we mentioned, rough and rugged, and then there's also animal dangers out there, such as snakes. We've seen people get attacked by other animals, but primarily snakes is a huge one.
Get attacked by other animals, like what?
Like we've had people encounter you know, the one that I can think of was coyotes at one point. Somebody was,
They'll attack you?
Yeah, it's rare, but it happens. But more importantly, the snakes are one of the ones that people tend to walk over. So the snakes are probably going to be the biggest.
They're not going to see it because it blends in.
But people, if somebody's traversing the desert and they're out there in the middle of nowhere, there's potential for small bites also from insects, from like scorpions, black widows, things of that nature. So
what about these skunks? You talked about skunks.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've seen that as well. People have been sprayed by skunks.
That's what you get.
Well, it's pretty sad, and I wish that upon nobody. It's
very difficult. You can't sneak up on anybody if you've been sprayed by a skunk.
But the environmental dangers are out there, and we want people to know the risks. You know, it's very hard to see somebody, you know, dealing with the heat, with the dangers, and then to add another component, animals is one of the dangers that are out there. So That's one of the things that we're messaging now in the summer months. The heat can definitely take its toll on a human body, and then there's also environmental dangers, which includes animals.
And javelinas.
Yes, yes. Javelinas are out there as well.
And they're not always friendly.
Well, the best thing is just if you see any wildlife or anybody out there,
go the other way.
Go the other way, exactly. Animals are usually giving warnings to us humans out there. So that's one of the things our agents involved. So one of our agents in the Douglas area a couple of years ago was bit as well in the leg. And fortunately, he was able to get to medical assistance pretty quick. Our agents were able to get him out of the mountains. But that's another agent danger is when we're out there patrolling, we've all walked around and over snakes because there's plenty of them out there.
So then we're going to talk about hiring. Do you want to be a Border Patrol agent? Play with snakes? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Law Matters Live Show airs Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, Jeff Tiggs, who spent 25 years in counterterrorism, will tell us about the Guardian Group and how you can get involved. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900. Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Border Patrol agents Daniel Hernandez and his partner Joe, who is on the phone. And before we continue, I want to tell everybody that Back the Blue Line Group is going to be showing their support for law enforcement at the Sheriff's Department on Benson Highway starting at 8:30. It's a peaceful group, so if you want to join them, that's where they'll be. I want to talk about how has the COVID virus affected Border Patrol?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things that we've been doing in recent months is we enacted, or the CBP enacted, Title 42, which is expulsions from the country. So in previous months, previous years, what would happen in a general sense was if somebody was arrested, they would be brought into a facility and processed for their immigration violations if they cross the border illegally, and then they would be returned to their country. Because we're trying to limit the possible exposure for COVID-19 and preventing confined spaces, if you will, people being in the same room, then what we're doing is we're expelling people from the field, meaning if somebody is encountered, our agents will ensure that they're okay physically. We'll take some fingerprints and biometrics, we call it, and run their information through a database search. And then if there's nothing derogatory on there, that person will be expelled from the country, meaning they'll be reintroduced into Mexico, which is the last place they came before they came into our custody. So that's one of the things we're doing to try to limit the exposure, human-to-human exposure, and also try to prevent from COVID-19 if somebody might have it or any other kind of communicable disease from spreading into the United States. So that's one of the things that we've actually streamlined the process of. When we encounter somebody, they're processed in the field in an open air setting and then expelled from the country in a very short time.
Okay, you say expelled from the country. What do you take them back to the where they...
We have an agreement with the government of Mexico, and they receive those folks back at the ports of entry.
At the ports of entry. So you don't actually, you're assessing them in the field, but then you take them to the ports. What if they do have a fever and they have symptoms? What do you do with them then?
Yeah, definitely. If somebody has any kind of symptoms or any kind of ailments, and not just any COVID-19 related symptom, but if they have any kind of medical ailment, then they get that treatment first. That's first and foremost priority. If somebody's exhibiting any kind of dire straits medically, they get that treatment first.
Now, that's one of the things I was really amazed, because the majority of people, when they think Border Patrol, they think, you know, you're just standing there watching for people to come over and sending them back over the border, mm-hmm. when actually majority of your job is rescue.
A lot. And I'll let my partner Joe, because he's an EMT, talk a little bit about our programs, because that's a huge part of what we do.
Hey, Joe.
Thanks, Dan. So here in Tucson sector, we actually have over 230 agents that are certified as emergency medical technicians. And the way the Border Patrol gets our certification is the same way that anybody else in the general public would. So that first responder who's certified on the, you know, riding the back of the ambulance, we run through those same certification courses. So a lot of our agents are very highly trained and highly skilled to render aid to people who need it, who we encounter. And kind of like what Dan was mentioning, whether that's COVID-19 related or not, you know, our EMTs are able to, you know, help out in those situations medically.
So there's an organization within Border Patrol. What's it called? BARTSTAR?
BORSTAR.
BORSTAR.
Border Patrol Search, Trauma, and Rescue, and that's part of our special operations group, and their sole mission is to essentially do search and rescue missions. A lot of those guys receive even more advanced training than our EMTs, and those guys are out there at a drop of a hat as soon as we get any indication that somebody is in any kind of distress. Those guys really are cream of the crop when it comes to kind of tech rescue kind of component out here in the desert.
Yeah, they've jumped out of helicopters to help people. It's like pretty amazing. I was privileged to have some of them come in and teach a class when we were in the Citizens Academy, and it was just phenomenal what they do and how they do it. And hats off to all you guys for what you do. It's pretty amazing. You have to chase your patients.
Chase down your patients. That's one of the lines one of the guys used, because a lot of times you're apprehending somebody and you have to go out and find them in the desert, and then you turn around and provide medical assistance because you don't know, that person could be just walking at the request of a smuggler, because they're following that smuggler into the United States, but they probably needed fluids, they probably needed foot treatment for any kind of blisters, and they don't know that until they're caught, and then they can actually reassess themselves. And I'm injured, and I've been walking for a day without these provisions and medical assistance. So many times our agents have to chase down the patients.
Yeah, and they don't tell them, these people that are smuggling them in, they don't tell them what kind of clothes to wear, what kind of shoes to bring, you know, that the terrain is going to be really harsh.
Exactly.
And you may not make it.
Exactly. And one thing that Joe touched on, the 230 EMTs, those are agents like him, he's an EMT, that they're out there patrolling. So they're out there doing their law enforcement duty, but if anything were to arise, they can react to it in the desert while we take that person to definitive care, which is a hospital or somewhere along the line like that.
these are the people you want to know, that you want, you know, to be there when when you're doing your illegal thing coming across the border. What have you discovered when you come across these groups? And I'm thinking the illegal substances, not just the illegal people. What have you guys been doing with that?
So recently in our sector, we've been apprehending and seizing a lot of synthetic narcotics. Usually when I say synthetic, I'm referring to meth, fentanyl, which is extremely dangerous, heroin. The Arizona area, the Tucson sector, historically has been a marijuana corridor. And for obvious reasons and for not obvious reasons, the demand and the supply of marijuana has changed. So what we're seeing more of nowadays is synthetic drugs. And so in the deserts, we used to apprehend mules with backpacks of marijuana. It's like a huge marijuana brick. That's still occurring, but at a very diminished level compared to years ago. Now we're seeing people with backpacks of synthetic drugs, which are much more dangerous, much more potent, and much more expensive. So that's one of the things that's changed in the last few years, specifically this year. I mean, we're seizing a lot of fentanyl this year in pill form and liquid, what have you.
Where are they getting these drugs to smuggle in? Are they making them? Are they shipping them in from, you know, China? Where are they coming from?
That's a little bit past our purview. We're not, that's more of a DEA type of question, because I'm sure there's different sources, but as far as we're concerned, at the ports, at between the ports where we patrol, both of our areas are seeing a lot more synthetic drugs.
And that's because people are using them.
Well,
unfortunately,
there's a demand, obviously, right? And so we're the law enforcement component. We wish there was no demand, so it wouldn't be but we have to deal with what comes our way. And between the ports, we saw a lot of rhetoric the last few years, and that a lot of drugs are coming through the ports of entry. And by sheer volume, they see the majority of people coming through the legal entryway, which is the port. But between the ports, we're still seeing a lot of drugs.
So people need to know that if you've got a drug problem, there are so many resources in Arizona and Pima County specifically that you can get help, get off the drugs, so that these people don't have to smuggle your drugs in. It would be a really cool thing.
Well, we do a lot of prevention. We do a lot of targeting the youth in our community. We do a lot of programs. I'm sure everybody here remembers the DARE program, which is a great foundation on how to steer clear from drugs. Another thing that the Border Patrol has done recently is not only keeping kids off of drugs, but preventing kids, youth, from becoming involved in the smuggling of it. And in the communities such as Nogales, Douglas, where we see large urban areas on the American side, we see youth recruited by the cartels to smuggle drugs, because these are United States citizen kids. They can easily move across the country or move across the highways. And so we've actually...
And they need the money.
Some of these areas are in need of financial need. And so, vulnerable teens, vulnerable youth will many times be susceptible to this kind of smuggling. So we target that, and we're aware of that. And we have an Operation Detour program, which targets these kids and kind of gives them... It's not a scared straight program by any means. It's more of an educational basis, so they have some sort of idea on what to look for. And because of that, we've actually spawned two separate programs, one aimed at younger kids. When we got to some of these schools, the high school teachers would tell us, hey, these are great programs, you know, to try to steer kids away from these criminal organizations. But many times you're too late. In high school, they're already involved. So we started actually targeting fourth graders. So we're experimenting with a program now on younger students. Because the cartel doesn't have the face of El Chapo. It's some other person. It's their cousin. It's their friend. You know, we think of this cartel figure, but we don't think about the lower level. And so that's one of the things that we're focusing on. And then we're also speaking to parents. We've had a couple of parent symposiums in Phoenix and in Nogales, where we're actually teaching parents on the signs and the symptoms of their kids being involved with criminal organizations.
Do you have an Explorer program?
We do.
Okay.
We do. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19, it's been postponed. but we've actually worked extensively with Explore Posts here throughout the sector to make sure that kids and teenagers have an alternative to explore a Border Patrol or any law enforcement career. And we're very proud of that program because it's not a breeding ground for agents. We just teach them fundamentals and life skills. And many of them, I would say the overwhelming majority of them, do not go into law enforcement. They go on to college.
That's awesome.
We're very proud of that.
Yeah, and I know the fire department has an Explorer program, as does TPD, Oral Valley. And I always tell people, get them involved. They're going to learn something. They're going to either learn that they really want to do this for the rest of their life, or, hey, this is not for me. But a lesson is going to be learned one way or the other. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or a total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Law Matters Live show airs Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, Jeff Tiggs, who spent 25 years in counterterrorism, will tell us about the Guardian Group and how you can get involved. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
The FBI will train its national and international law enforcement partners on indicators of human trafficking throughout the year, which marks the 20th anniversary of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. The act provides tools to combat trafficking worldwide and requires the FBI to collect data on the crime. All 56 of the FBI's field offices have ongoing human trafficking investigations, more than 1,900 cases. That's an increase in the number of cases over the past several years. Deputy Director David Bowditch.
Most of the cases we see, roughly 90%, are commercial sex trafficking, and they're amongst the most heinous crimes that the FBI encounters.
The FBI's Victim Services Division ensures that survivors have access to emotional support, social services, and medical care.
We have to speak for the victims.
If you are a victim of human trafficking, call or text the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline at 888-373-7888. With FBI This Week, I'm Molly Halpern of the Bureau.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Border Patrol agent Daniel Hernandez and his partner Joe, who's on the phone. If you have any questions, the number is 790-2040. And let's talk about some of the seizures you guys have done lately. This is pretty impressive.
Yes, definitely. One of the things that we're commonly seeing is youth being the active smugglers. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to combat through the program. I mentioned Operation Detour and the newly under construction Team Kids, which is aimed at younger demographic. But I'm going to let my partner speak on the most recent seizures because those kind of highlight what we were talking about here.
All right. I just got you guys lost for a second.
No problem. I was just speaking on that last seizure. I was talking about the Operation Detour program and how we're trying to keep youth out. And the last couple of seizures you and I had talked about are kind of indicative of what we're trying to avoid with the youth becoming involved with the criminal element in the community.
Oh, absolutely. And right off the bat, the first thing that comes to mind to me is a situation we had earlier in the week where we had two kids about high school age smuggling 23 people in a tractor trailer. They weren't in the back. All 23 people were jammed into the cab of this semi-truck. With these high school age kids trying to maneuver this commercial vehicle down a highway in Arizona. I mean, that to me just that just seems like an extremely dangerous situation for everybody involved. And luckily, we were able to mitigate that and kind of stop that in its tracks. But that could have been extremely dangerous for everybody.
Where'd they get the truck?
That's a great question. You know, these criminal organizations, they have access to all kinds of resources, whether it be vehicles, people, and they'll really go to whatever means necessary to smuggle their people and products into the U.S.
Oh, I can't imagine a high school kid driving a big rig, a 13-wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. I've heard where people have been in the back of the trailer and horrible things happened.
Definitely. And one that, you know, you bring up that case, which happened in Texas, which was horrific. It was probably one of the worst ones any law enforcement agency has seen. But one more, the most common seizure that we see are people stuffed in trunks. And even though the semi that happened in Texas kind of brought that type of smuggling to the public eye, we see the trunks happening a lot, and somebody is in just as much danger in the vehicle's trunk, in the back seat, or concealed under.
It's not air conditioned.
It's not a place for humans to travel. So 100 degree temperature out here today, 109 degrees inside a trunk is 135, 140 degrees in the summertime. So it's very dangerous. So even though we don't see that semi tractor trailer every day, we see the trunks pretty much every day during the summer months, and it's pretty scary.
So what do? They get in the trunk in the Mexico side of the border and then drive over? Or?
Typically, somebody would cross on foot. Okay. They're guided by a foot guide, and they'll lead them to a stash house or perhaps a road. They get picked up by a vehicle that's involved in the smuggling, and then they enter the trunk. The problem lies in the heat, the lack of oxygen, and the time. We don't know. Many times people can be in there for excess of hours, you know. And so if somebody's put in there, who knows? We've had a lot of injuries. We've pulled out people from those trunks, and they're suffering from heat-related injuries.
Oh, I can't imagine. I can't imagine. So if you see somebody getting in a trunk, that's your first red flag. Maybe you should call law enforcement and say, hey.
That's one of the things that we ask for the community's help, and we put that on our news releases every time we mention a situation like that, is if you see anything that doesn't look right, if you're a community member here in Southern Arizona, if you see something like that, just call somebody, call Border Patrol, call 911, call somebody in law enforcement so we can investigate it a little bit further.
Yeah, better to be wrong than, you know, be dead.
Correct. And we do get a lot of help from the community. That's one thing I did want to mention, is that the folks in the border community, such as Nogales, Douglas, some of these folks are just as passionate about this as we are. And they're passionate about making sure that people are not injured. They're passionate about people not putting themselves in dangerous situations. And so they'll call us when they see something suspicious. Hey, I just saw some people running from the desert. They loaded up in this vehicle. It doesn't look right. Can you somebody check it out? And many times with the community's help, you know, we can't be everywhere at once.
Right.
And that's where we rely on the community to give us those calls and give us that information.
Yeah, that call could save a life.
Correct.
Absolutely. So, okay, we've got people in trunks. This just boggles my mind. What does somebody say to you to convince you to get in a trunk of a car?
Well, every case is different, but the smuggler, That's their bread and butter. They only get paid on makes. They don't get paid on misses. So they get paid by how many people they bring into the country.
Okay, wait a minute. You just used terminology, makes and misses. Explain that.
Well, smugglers get paid on smuggling. So if they're not successful at it, they don't get paid. And so they're really good at coercing people or at lying to people. And my partner will speak to this as much as I will on it. He's worked in the Ajo area, where it is far removed from civilization. You have to walk dozens of miles just to cross a road. And so the average person would never take that journey. If you say somebody, if you're a smuggler and you say to somebody, hey, I'm going to take you to the United States, come with me. They're going to ask you, well, what's it like? And if you say you're going to have to walk 48 miles in the middle of 110 degree heat with 1 gallon of water, most people would not do it. So they lie about that. They say it's going to be an easy journey. We're going to have plenty of food. It's not like how people tell you. So there's a lot of coercion and a lot of misinformation that gets given to potential migrants.
I've heard where, you know, they'll look at the lights of Sierra Vista and tell them that's actually Phoenix.
Correct. Or Chicago. Or
Chicago right there.
Yeah, you just have to walk with me. It's just a couple of hours and lo and behold, it's a walk to death pretty much.
So when people are being told that, you know, that's Phoenix or Chicago or whatever, what is their intention when they come over here and they want to go to Phoenix? What's in Phoenix?
Well, it just depends on the person, and I can't speak on behalf of everybody, but...
Why not?
Every case is different, and, one thing I will mention that kind of ties in with that is a lot of these folks crossing here in southern Arizona are not ultimately going to end their journey here. They're crossing to go somewhere else in the country. The most people that we interview, the overwhelming majority are not planning to stay anywhere in Arizona. They're planning to go to other parts of the country. That's why we try to tell the average person that what happens in Tucson Sector Border Patrol impacts the rest of the country.
Sure,
because
it's
we have a nexus to everywhere. We arrested a sex offender from D.C. this week. He had been convicted of first-degree sexual offenses in D.C., and he was crossing here in southern Arizona. Well, the likelihood of him probably staying in Arizona is very low, but more than likely he was going to return to the place where he had lived previously. And so many of these folks that are crossing here are not staying here, but they're entering and going somewhere else into the country.
Okay, when you run the background on somebody, you find out that they've actually been sent away from the country, sent back to wherever they came from because of an arrest or an egregious act like you just described. What do you do with them when they're trying to get in the country again?
Joe, you want to answer that?
What happened, the same thing that would happen when we encounter anybody, is we would run their fingerprints through a criminal background check and determine who is this person, get a better idea of is this a first-time offender? Is this somebody who we've caught 20 times? I know there was actually one individual in that semi-truck that I just referenced who we have caught 20 times. So that person is going to be amenable to a different consequence delivery initiative than a first-time offender. So there's immigration laws in place for people who have committed illegal entry, and then there's a separate law for re-entry, where, you know, if somebody isn't a first-timer, those charges become more and more severe.
So, but you always send them back to the country they came from, or Mexico, rather than incarcerate them here?
If a person is committed a crime in the United States, whether that be a drug charge or, if they face any of our immigration charges, they will do that jail time here in the United States, and then they will be repatriated back to their country of citizenship.
But the courts ultimately decide that, and so that's what we want everybody to be fully aware that every case is different.
Right.
During the immigration process, obviously a judge weighs in on the ultimate outcome of a person.
I like that word, repatriated. Okay, we have a caller on the phone. Susie, what's on your mind?
Okay, I'm backtracking just a little bit. It's so important. I know you'll be glad I did. I would never take children hiking without whistles around their necks.
Get
me?
Yeah.
And that's a very, water, of course, is essential. But literally, it makes the difference because right away, you can blow the whistle and the child will blow their whistle if they're lost. It really works. We did it in the Rocky Mountains like crazy all the time. And it really does work. My husband was in search and rescue. And so that I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're going to smuggle your family, at least give the kids a means of communicating, which would be a whistle.
And one thing that just kind of leads me to brings a thought to my head. We talked about rescues earlier. We've rescued a lot of United States citizens as well. We've rescued a lot of people, stranded hikers, people who've gotten lost in the desert. So that's one thing we like to mention as well. We're rescuing folks that are coming to the country legally, yes, but we've also help any of our law enforcement partners if they're doing an active search for, let's say, hikers, anybody from
anywhere,
we'll help with that as well, because we know the area and we have the resources, fortunately. So we've rescued from everybody. So any tip for anybody being in the desert is good. Just, you know, be cognizant of your surroundings and be aware of your limitations.
You know, that's a good point that Susie brings up, though. And if you're planning on hiking, whether it's up to Mount Lemmon, which you're not supposed to do yet, or anywhere, if you've got kids with you, make sure they have a whistle, because they wander away, they get lost, at least they can blow their whistle and be found. So that's a really good point. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Law Matters Live Show airs Saturday mornings at 8 when our listeners ask questions of people who have answers. On our next show, Jeff Tiggs, who spent 25 years in counterterrorism, will tell us about the Guardian Group and how you can get involved. This is your show, Arizona, so get your questions ready to join the talk at 790-2040. You don't want to be left out. Set your alarm for AM 1030 The Voice. And we can't do the show without your support. Please go to lawmatters1030.org to contribute.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Getting a reverse mortgage with the new rules and expanded limits can be a positive, life-changing experience. The reverse offers multiple ways of having your equity work for you, from a monthly income, an interest-bearing equity account, or total cash out. Give me a call and let's see which reverse option best works for your future plans. Call 520-310-9900. Ask for me, Sherry. That's 520-310-9900. Thanks for staying with us. Our guests today are Border Patrol, Daniel Hernandez, and his partner, Joe, who's in the office on the phone. We want to talk. I'm curious, real quick, if we can address the tunnels, because I know over the years there have been tunnels found and people, you know, use that to traffic people and drugs. And how are we doing on the tunnels?
We've gotten very good at finding them before they're finished. So the last few tunnels have actually been found before completion. Obviously, there's a lot of investment from criminal organizations into tunnels. But when we first think back to the tunnels that were found here in Southern Arizona, we're actually the tunnel capital in terms of illicit tunnels.
Arizona?
Nogales specifically.
Oh, I'm so proud.
Out of the 198 or close to 200 illicit international drug tunnels, about 120-ish, maybe just a little slightly less, have happened here in Nogales. And so, you know, we've gotten really good at it. We've gotten really good at finding them. And our agents actually take a proactive approach, meaning Nogales, Arizona, sits at a lower altitude than Nogales, Sonora. So the water and drainage systems must occur from the Mexican side into the American side, because as water flows downward, there's got to be legitimate drainage and tunnels to carry that water, that flow. So our agents are actually going down into these legitimate tunnels that must exist, drainage and sewage, and they're checking them for illicit entries and outlets, because that's where a lot of the illicit tunnels were starting from. They'd start off in a legit tunnel, and then they would branch off and create their own illicit exit or entry point.
And I've heard that, you know, sometimes these exit points are into a house.
Correct.
And, you know, people are, you know, so if you live in a neighborhood and people continue to come out of the house and nobody's going in, that's a hint.
That's correct. So any kind of suspicious activity with dirt or people coming in or coming out, that's obviously. But we've actually taken a proactive approach. And since a few years ago, we started doing this. Since that happened, we've actually seen the tunnels just significantly dropped in terms of frequency. And so we're still seeing them here and there. But fortunately, the last few we found before they were even finished.
That's awesome. You guys are good at your jobs.
Well, the agents down in Nogales are great agents. Those guys are, those men and women are always on the ball. They're always thinking, trying to think two steps ahead.
Yeah, very cool. So If somebody wanted to be a Border Patrol agent, what do they do?
Yes, my partner Joe will
okay, Joe.
Key you in on that.
Well, I think one of the great things about the Border Patrol is that you can come from essentially whatever walk of life and try and be a Border Patrol agent. Like myself, I'm from the New York City area, and before I was a Border Patrol agent, I was making pizzas.
I want to meet this guy.
our workforce has an extremely diverse background, not just with our ethnicity. We're actually a majority of our workforce is Hispanic. But we come from all over the United States. We have people with military backgrounds, and that's always great. But we also have people that have done, you know, a lot of other great things too before they become agents. So right now, I believe we are hiring, and those applications can always be found at usajobs.gov. All of our job listings are always posted on that website, and we frequently direct people there. So any words of encouragement to anybody who would love to join one of the best professional law enforcement agencies, go for it. It's a great job.
Especially if you're bilingual. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't have to be Spanish. Any language.
Any language. And you don't have to know Spanish when you're applying. You can take what's called the artificial language test. And so they just give you some artificial made-up language to kind of gauge your experience or your
like
ability
pig
to
Latin?
Learn.
What are we talking about?
No, it's completely synthetic. It's just like a made-up language, but it's not to test you on how fluent you are in another language. It's just to see how well you can pick stuff up.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Joe mentioned is we have people from all over the country and actually from all over the world. From my graduating class, I keep forgetting because it was such a long time ago, but I believe there was like 10 countries represented there, meaning
wow.
People that had immigrated to the United States, became naturalized citizens, and then wanted to be Border Patrol agents. We had people from Poland, Turkey, Vietnam. I mean, we had such a diverse class, and it was really unique because we had so many different walks of life. We had engineers, we had authors, we had, I mean, you name it. Our academy class was just completely diverse.
So you don't necessarily have to, okay, do you have to have a college degree?
It helps, but you don't. The application process is for anybody over the 18 years of age with clean criminal history, obviously driver's license, but all the details are on usajobs.gov. But it's a great career, and it's one of the most diverse agencies. So we have so many jobs, as my partner illustrates. You know, he's an agent, but he also has a medical background. He was a firefighter back in New York. And he
made pizzas too?
He did everything.
I really want to meet this guy.
He's like the world's most interesting man. And he carried that medical training with him to the Border Patrol, got certified here as an EMT, and now he patrols and he has an EMT certification.
I was saying, okay, so if he's an EMT in New York, it doesn't transfer?
No, we make you get our own just to make sure that you're on up to date.
Okay, that works.
But it helps, right? So you, when you go through the training, you'll know.
You've already been there.
You'll have one leg up and you'll be able to breeze through it.
Very cool. So how long is the training?
The Border Patrol training is right around 5 months, and it takes place in a little town called Artesia, New Mexico. It's near Roswell. It's just
isn't
a small...
Isn't that where they have space aliens?
Yes.
And do we have any of those on the department?
No.
Okay.
And
just
if they did, it'd be kind of cool. I wish someone would tell me, but to my knowledge, no. And it's a really, really extensive training. It's like being in college. You're taking classes all day. You're doing some really cool stuff. And this is a job if you're an outdoorsy person, or if you know somebody who's outdoorsy and wants to really serve their country. I really recommend it because it's the best of both worlds. It's law enforcement, but it's outdoorsy.
But not everybody has an outdoors job.
No, and that's what I mentioned about having a diverse agency. We have folks that sit in the courtroom all day because that's one of the things that interests them is processing and helping the prosecution. We have agents that are good at computers and they do some computer-focused jobs, and we can find a fit for you.
Okay, I want to thank both of you for coming on. And Joe, thank you for being on the telephone. And until next week, I want everybody to shop local, stay safe, stay tuned, and stay off the mountain.